Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live with MJ, where I have the distinct pleasure of interviewing some of the greatest names in sports, entertainment, philanthropy, and corporate America from our studio in New York City and live from the red carpet. For those of you who are first-time listeners, my name is MJ Padone. I am the president and founder of Inter Public Relations and have worked in the sports, entertainment, and fashion businesses for over 20 years. I have a personal passion for giving back, and my show highlights some of the great men and women that are working to make the world a better place. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, Gina Mason. Hello, Gina. How are you?
Hi, great. How are you?
I am fantastic. And today, as you know, we have Mark Bruengraber joining us. So I hope you're just as excited as I am, Gina, since we had the pleasure of working with him at the Ferraro Brothers Twin Rinks. Well, today I would like to welcome our special guest. Again, it's Mark Bruengraber to the show. Mark
Good
is
afternoon.
A seasoned attorney. Good afternoon, Mark, but I am going to give you a fabulous intro so we can let our listeners know who you are. And again, Mark is a seasoned attorney with Felder and Felder. Is that, am I correct, pronouncing that correctly, Mark?
Yes, you are.
Okay, in Westbury, New York, where you specialize in contract business, commercial law, real estate law, credit union law, wills and estates. Mark is also a part owner and editor of International Hockey Forums, which is a website dedicated to ice hockey in all nations. The forum discusses all things hockey from national team programs and leagues to major and minor European pro leagues, as well as international tournaments. Mark is also the spokesperson for the Israeli national ice hockey team and has been instrumental bringing awareness to hockey in Israel and securing exhibition games in North America to showcase the team. Recently, you were a guest goalie for Team Israel earlier this month, where you played against the Ferraro Brothers Team USA at Twin Rinks in Eisenhower Park. So, Mark, I'd like to thank you for joining us today, and how are you doing?
I am well, thanks, and thank you both for having me on. Just want to say I don't know if we can adjust the phone line a little bit. It's tough for me to hear Gina, but I hear you just fine.
Yes, I thank you. I actually had to switch over phones because I don't know, we were having some technical difficulties.
Ah, there we go. All right, well, thank
Super.
You both again. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, great. So, Mark, let's start talking about your career a little bit.
Sure.
When did you decide when you wanted to start practicing law, and where did you go to law school, and anything you want to fill us in about your experience
sure.
as an attorney?
Well, this is my 19th year of practicing in New York State. I knew in college that I wanted to be an attorney. I wasn't good enough to crack the NHL or anything close, so law school it was.
And we're going to get to that, by the way.
Yeah. Well, we'll get there. I almost did go play in the Israeli League for a couple of years, but I went straight to law school out of Binghamton. I went to Cardozo, which is part of Yeshiva University mm-hmm. and is their law school, and graduated 1996, took the bar, passed immediately, and went right into practice.
Wow. Good for you. And how did you come to choose commercial business real estate law?
I basically fell into it, really. At the time, you know, when I graduated in 1996, we had a very, very tough job market, as you may or may not recall. And then I had started actually with Felder and Felder out of law school, and that's pretty much the area that they are in. I ended up leaving after a couple of years, moving on. But I stayed close with Craig Felder, who's the main partner in the firm. And ultimately, after several years away, I was going to start my own practice. I called Craig for some advice and basically told him, I know how to practice law. I know how to get clients. I don't know how to run a small business office, which I need to do to make my own firm. Can you help me? So Craig somehow convinced me to come back and work out a different deal with him now that my career was at a different stage. And now it's God, I think I went back to him in August of 2001. And my wife at this point calls Craig my second wife, which is pretty much true. So there we have
it. Great. And I know there are a lot of listeners out there who are either thinking about going to law school or want to become an attorney. And if there's a number one tip that you would be able to advise, what would that be?
Survive the first year of law school. I would say the first year is the most stressful thing you will ever go through, even in my opinion, even more than the bar. But if you can gut your way through it, the second and third years are not as bad. The other thing I would really say is that law school really teaches you how to read like an attorney, how to analyze things like an attorney, how to budget your time and stress like an attorney. But it does in no way does it teach you the real world practice of law. That you get pretty much through internships and you get on the job.
You know, it's funny. I have a lot of friends that are in the field, and I feel like it's based on the like the real estate attorneys are really happy, the entertainment attorneys, but then I have some that are are licensing attorneys that aren't. I don't know. Do you think the different fields of practice has something to do with why people may be a little more passionate about law than others?
I mean, possibly. Just to backtrack for a moment, the different areas of law are ultimately as different as different areas of medicine. And people will come to me sometimes and ask me a question, well, you're a lawyer, you know, I have this personal injury or I have a tax issue or what have you. And if I don't practice in those areas, I decline to answer. It's basically like if you need a heart surgeon, going to the greatest dentist in the world. It might be a great doctor, but not for what you need at that point in time. So you really need to be passionate about what it is you're practicing in. I think in any area, whether it's law, sports, you know, public relations, you name it, any field, if you don't enjoy what you do, you're not going to do it well. That's just my belief.
That's very true.
You have to enjoy it at least to a degree. And from my own practice, you know, you had mentioned a bit of the contract and business commercial. It's all basically connected in the respect that I represent people, whether they're individuals or businesses, that all areas of business law, contract law, you know, negotiating, litigation where people just can't agree and they have to sue over a contract or a broken business relationship, you know, landlord-tenant practice, co-ops, condos, it all kind of intersects the real estate and business and contract world. So they may be different aspects of that type of law, but they all ultimately, you know, stem back to that basic, hey, this is a business and contract and real estate-based practice. So really any aspect of those types of areas I handle.
Very nice. Well, let's transition over to your other passion. Obviously, you have a love for the game of hockey. And, you know, when did you start playing hockey? When did you develop that love for the game? And, you know, obviously you're from New York, too. So who's your team?
Well, my team is the New York Rangers. My wife's a diehard Islander fan. And my kids, much to my wife's chagrin, my two little girls became Ranger fans with Daddy. But it, you know, that stems back to my dad. My dad is a dental technician, so he does caps and crowns and false teeth and what have you. And he did that for the Rangers in the 1960s when they were practicing out of Long Beach prior to the time they moved up to Rye. So as a kid, I'm 43. As a kid growing up in the 70s, you were a Ranger fan in my house. And, you know, I got it from my dad. I'm pretty much a diehard Ranger fan. So, getting a chance to play the other, you know, a couple of weeks ago against the Ferraros and some of the guests that they had was quite a thrill for me because the highest level I had ever really obtained was playing some intercollegiate club hockey for Binghamton. So it was quite a thrill for me to be out there.
Yeah, that was actually we were gonna transition over to that too about the game. So tell us a little bit about your experience playing against the Ferraros, you know, last week and the event that went on.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that, you know, the Twin Rinks and Chris and Peter themselves, you know, Chris and Peter Ferraro, you couldn't ask to deal with more professional, warm, classy people. Really can't say enough good things about them. Their staff, the roster that they assembled, you know, Ron Friedman for Twin Rinks, just, you know, Glenn Heffernan, who worked with him, Chris Huber, CJ Nizich, they're just a top-notch staff and group of people. You know, as far as the actual getting out there with them, I knew a little bit what to expect because when we had done the press conference the day before the game, Chris and Peter were nice enough to invite myself and the six or seven members of the Israeli team that had been there to skate with their team, you know, after the press conference. So I got a little bit of a taste of what I was in for the next evening, which was a lot of fun. You know, it's not every day a 43-year-old attorney on Long Island gets to step in there and face shots from, you know, Matt Gilroy, Radek Martinek, the Ferraros, Glenn Anderson, guys like that. So it's, you know, Matt Anderson out of the KHL, who's a local guy from Long Island. It's kind of insane when you think about it, but I don't think I embarrassed myself, so it wasn't too bad.
You actually did a great job, by the way.
I appreciate that. That's very kind
and
of
you.
You
did, and you did forget to mention, you mentioned the list of fabulous people, but the fabulous publicist that actually hosted the press conference.
Absolutely.
Within that 24 was that, hours.
I would say, MJ, that you did a top-notch pro job, and I can't believe the number of people that you actually put in contact with our program. You know, for MJ's listeners out there, I think I was interviewed, if I recall correctly, by FastHockey.com, Fios One, News 12, MSG Network, Newsday. Yeah, so thank you. That was it was a whirlwind, and it was quite insane. I got a taste of what a pro hockey player goes through, I guess, on a daily basis, and it's a lot. But it was a lot of fun, and it gave a lot of great attention to the Israeli program, you know, the men's national team program, hockey in Israel in general. And, you know, just the whole event was really geared towards trying to raise awareness of Israeli hockey here in New York. And I think we did, and you certainly did a great job with that. So thank you very much.
Oh, no, it's our pleasure. And, you know, I have a passion for Israel. I've been there, I don't know, either 12 or 13 times off the business. Never had the pleasure to really get to see as much as I would have liked to, but it's great seeing that the relationship that is being built between, you know, both hockey teams and just raising awareness. And I know they want to take this game to Israel as well. And any thoughts on that?
That would be fantastic. You know, Israel and hockey have a somewhat unique history. The game was really brought by Canadian expats to Israel in the late 1980s, early 1990s. And then the Canadian Jewish community over there really donated a ton of money, and they built an Olympic-sized rink in Metula, which is the northernmost town in Israel, literally on the border with Lebanon. You can look past what they call the good fence and see Hezbollah positions, which is kind of disconcerting. But that's where the rink is. And other than that, there's a half-size rink, you know, more in the population center of the country. But in essence, their one real rink is up there in Metula. It's been there since, I guess, the early beginning of the 1990s. And Israel, of course, has about a million Soviet immigrants, Soviet Jews and certain non-Jews who were their relatives who came from the Soviet Union when it collapsed. And they, of course, have a history of hockey growing up in the Soviet Union. So the, you know, when a country is 7 million, at least 1 million people are familiar with the sport. So it gives it gave them the ability to have a league and grassroots programs, but you know, it never really took off except in recent years. You know, some wealthier benefactors here and there will give a donation, or you know, we'll do games like we did with the Ferraro brothers and raise some money to help them. But they don't really get government support, so you know, the private donations are really what drives it. You know, for what we do here in North America, all the money that was generated with the Ferraro Brothers game, for example, goes to support of Israel Hockey, which is a 501c3 charity here. So if anyone is inclined to donate, it is tax deductible for American citizens to donate. And really, you know, Israel, for whether you're Jewish or Christian, really is a special place for a lot of people of any kind who have any kind of religious feeling. So in order to take and kind of support what is my family's ancestry and also a special place for a lot of people and combine it with the game I love and kind of help it, you know, get positive press and promotion through the sport that I love has just been really a dream come true.
What would you think? What is the most popular sport now? Would you say it's basketball? I know a lot of the American players go overseas and they'll play
Israel
and other different
itself?
Countries.
Well, basketball, yes. And I would say soccer. They have a pro soccer league. They have a minor pro soccer league. I don't know where they relate, you know, in terms of the world rankings or anything. But from what I understand from people over there, their top pro soccer league draws pretty well, and it's slightly under, I guess, MLS level. For comparison,
right.
Over here, their basketball, on the other hand, is really good. Their top league is called, I forget how to say it in Hebrew, but in any event, it translates to Winner League, which is a bit. Winner is like a big, I guess, like lotto type company over there, and that's the primary sponsor. And there's a ton of sponsorship money. It's a legit pro league. You get some big players who go there out of NCAA D1 programs and from other European pro teams that end up coming there. And, you know, similar to soccer, what Israel, what their basketball does is they're part of FIBA, you know, the international governing body of basketball.
Yes.
And what they'll do is they have their own championships in Israel, and then whoever wins the Israeli league, and I think also the runner-up, goes into, you know, basically the Eurobasket League, I think they call it, which is basically like a Champions League, which is similar to what they do in soccer. So top Israeli teams such as Maccabi Tel Aviv, which is pretty much the titan of that league, they'll play teams from Italy and Greece and Spain and, you know, everywhere in Europe. And they've won it a bunch of times. They've won the European Championship several times, actually, in the last 10 years. And they've played NBA teams, including the Knicks. I know they lost to the Knicks, which I don't know how well that speaks for them lately.
How anybody...
But
anybody could,
but they,
actually, if you and I and Gina suited up, we'd beat the Knicks right now.
Yeah, we might, and I'm 5'8", but you know, but look, I mean, the, you know, on a serious note, they did Maccabi Tel Aviv. They beat the Toronto Raptors a couple times. I mean, it's, you know, basketball in Israel's it's a serious pro game. You know, hockey, on the other hand, you know, the top league over in Israel is akin to what we would call Junior B, or, you know, if you wanted to get a little, you know, into college, what they call ACHA D2, which is essentially like fourth tier U.S. college hockey. It's a much, much different level of development than basketball or football over there.
Now,
you know,
can you tell us a little bit, too, about how you actually got involved with the Israeli national hockey team and kind of the process? Like, you know, I know, I think you mentioned at the press conference that your forum, International Hockey Forums, had a lot to do with that. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, to back up a tiny bit, I played for SUNY Binghamton. I had played for West Islip High School before that. Then I went on to law school. I got out of law school in 96. I wasn't yet 25. I was still 24. So at that point, I had an offer from a team in the Israeli league called HC Bat Yam, which is near Tel Aviv, to play. I almost took it. I didn't. I ultimately, you know, listened to my mom and, hey, you need to get a job, and who's going to hire you after you go play in the Israeli Hockey League? But I listened to her. I kind of regretted it. I mean, financially, she was probably right, but, you know, from an emotional standpoint, I always kind of regretted not going. You know, and at my age, that ship has sailed. But ultimately, the internet came about, and I started doing some research, and I found this website called International Hockey Forums, which you can get to if you type in forums.internationalhockey.net into your browser. And it's a website where, in English, people from all over the world talk about hockey leagues literally worldwide, especially in countries where it's a minor or developing sport. So I found the Israeli forum there. And, you know, because there's all kinds of people from Europe and Asia posting there, the English isn't always the greatest, but you can kind of make out what they're talking about. And it's great. You see pictures and you see videos and there's stats and people talking about it. So eventually I got very involved. The then owner of the site wanted to get out of it, and ultimately myself and a couple of the other guys formed an LLC here in New York, and that LLC now owns the site. And ultimately, I guess, because of all the activities on the Israel forum there, some of the guys from the national team caught wind of it. They started following it, and then some of them started giving me inside information here and there, and I became kind of the go-to guy for news and info, etc. And eventually, when they came up with the idea of trying to do some exhibition games to raise money, they had previously sent the under-18 team over, you know, what they call their junior team, but it's really under-18, U-18s. Mm-hmm. I had been involved kind of just helping them with that, but I always pushed for them to send the men's team because I thought it would be a bigger draw. And eventually they set up a game last year against MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and I helped set that up. And basically at the time I was 42, and they asked me if I'd like to play net as a guest player since it was just an exhibition game. You know, obviously I couldn't play for them in world competition or anything. And I kind of told them at 42 and not having played real hockey in 8 or 9 years, you probably don't want me in there. And they said, no, go ahead and do it. So I trained with Barbara Williams, who's an NHL power skating coach, kind of to get myself back up to speed. And I went in and limited playing time, but didn't give up a goal, and we won the game. And, you know, unlike the game with the Ferraros, you know, that was full checking and, you know, the team's going for blood. So we did win that game. It was great. And then when I was training with Barbara Williams, I would see Chris and Peter out and about. Chris's little guy, Evan, was skating with Barbara. So we got to talking. They were building the twin rinks at the time, and I told them what we were doing, and they thought it would be a great opportunity to help the Israeli Federation as well as promote, you know, the twin rinks, which is really a wonderful amenity, really, for the people of Nassau County and by extension Long Island to have. And that's how that game got put together.
That's really interesting. But, you know, now that you just mentioned twin rinks again, I feel like there are so many people that don't know about the facility. And can you share your take on the facility, the programs that they offer, and what makes them really stand out as an elite rink?
Sure. Well, you know,
in Long Island.
Sure. In my opinion, by far, it's the nicest rink on Long Island. They have two NHL-size rinks that are brand new. The one that we played on obviously seats somewhere to the tune of 2,500 to 3,000 people. I think for our game, we had over 2,300 there. You know, the smaller of the two rinks, I think, seats between 1,000 to 1,500 people. They have the outdoor Winter Classic-style ice rink out in front. They're still in the process of finishing certain amenities off, but they're going to have a full-scale restaurant there. They do have a great gym already over there. They have, you know, full pro shop, skating schools, instructional hockey. They run junior A hockey with the New York Bobcats, youth with the Long Island Gulls. The Ferraro brothers themselves have a hockey school there that, you know, I think they just call either Long Island Dynamo or Ferraro Brothers Hockey, where they do all kinds of instructional stuff with kids and even adults that want to learn. And you just couldn't ask for a nicer looking as well as more functional facility. And I don't think there's anything on Long Island, frankly, that comes close.
I totally agree. And you know what, and here in New York City, too, I mean, we have Chelsea Piers, but I was so impressed seeing that facility and what they do and how committed they are. You don't see most owners and most former athletes really that hands-on, and they genuinely, I mean, they spend a lot of time there. They care about the programs, and It's
they're fantastic. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
They well, I mean, for those who don't know, I mean, Chris and Peter each, you know, played a little bit with the Rangers and Chris a little bit with the Islanders, but they both played, you know, with other teams in the NHL. They had long careers in the AHL. They had careers in, you know, pro over in Europe and Germany and Sweden. And, you know, they both played with the U.S. national and or Olympic teams. So and they're young. I mean, you know, they just turned 42 and the shape they're still in is unbelievable. And, you know, unfortunately for them, they were in their prime during the clutch and grab dead puck era of the NHL when smaller skilled guys really didn't have a place in the league. You know, had they come out today, you know, had they been in their primes today or back in the 80s, you know, I think they would have had longer NHL careers, certainly, because they had the skill and the speed that today's game requires. You know, but they still ended up playing a little bit in the end, and you know, certainly you can't take away the fact that they played for you know, Team USA and international competition, and they had themselves. Although they're pretty self-deprecating, I think they had great careers, and it's great that they're in the kind of shape to still play the way they can play. And you know, obviously, you were at the game. You can see when they want to, they can still skate and they can still pass and they can still put the puck in the net. Oh yeah. And they're great guys. So you couldn't, if you're going to go and have your child learn on Long Island how to play hockey, you couldn't ask for nicer guys, and you certainly couldn't ask for guys with more skill and knowledge of the game than former U.S. Olympian and national team players to teach the kids.
I absolutely agree. What anything you want to add about Ron Greshner coming out? And I know he coached Team USA and Joe Panescalli from Sopranos.
Joey G.
It was really great.
Joey G's a great guy.
It was great to see them there, and especially Ron for taking the time and supporting them, and that really speaks volumes to the to Peter and Chris. But he was having a great time, and he, you know, was just thrilled and wants to invite everybody. I know he's going to be hosting a golf tournament, and he wants all you guys to attend. So, what was your take on having them there?
Well, Ron, you know, it's a thrill to have Ron Greshner there. Certainly, Ron had mentioned to me after the game that they had asked him originally if he wanted to play, and he said, "I'm 60, so I'm going to decline." But he also mentioned, you know, just for himself, Joey, and the Ferraros and their entire roster, they really had no idea coming in what they were going to really be facing in the Israeli national team. And, you know, look, let's be honest, they kind of knew they were going to win, but they didn't know, you know, what level of competition we'd be able to offer to them. And they said they were quite surprised at just how good, you know, the team was. I mean, you got to remember, again, we had a mix of the Israeli national team and some guest players to fill out the roster since they didn't have all of their players available. But if you saw our top two lines, that was Israeli national team guys who go and compete for Israel at the Worlds every year. And, you know, Chris and Peter and Ron Greshner and Joey Ganascoli all said to a man that they were just shocked at how good they really were. You know, and some of the Israeli guys have played a little bit of, you know, minor pro or semi-pro in Europe. So, you know, they've got some experience outside of the Israeli league itself that's a little bit higher up. So they said they were surprised at just how good we really were, which was nice, you know, and that was the whole point, was to open people's eyes to it and let them know that it's out there. And hopefully it garnered enough interest where people are willing to support it in the future. And I know there's been some talk about having Chris and Peter bring either the same or a similar roster of theirs over to Israel to do it there, which I think if we got a bunch of former NHL players over to Israel to compete against the national team would probably draw a ton of media and public interest over there, which would be nothing but positive.
Of course, and of course, you know, Gina and I would have to attend and help.
I would hope you would.
The media aspect.
I would hope you would.
You know what I found?
I would hope to go too.
You know what I found so interesting, which I don't think people realized, or at least I was unaware of, you know, like Daniel and some of the other guys that were there were talking about, you know, the commitment that you have to have, and you have to, you know, go play in Israel for 2 years in order to be eligible for the team. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that? Because I found that whole process to be so interesting.
sure. I think you were referring to Dan Mazur on the Israeli team. But, yeah, the way it works under the International Ice Hockey Federation, which is the governing body of ice hockey worldwide, from the Olympics down through youth leagues, you know, USA Hockey, for example, Hockey Canada or affiliates, that's how it works. So, you know, whether you're going to play for the U.S., Canada, Russia, Sweden, or a team like Israel, you have to be a citizen of that country, and you have to play in their league for two consecutive seasons without playing hockey anywhere else. Otherwise, you can't qualify to play for them, you know, which presents a challenge for Israel because you have a guy who played for us as a guest player, Aaron Spivak, who played for us against the Ferraros. Aaron plays Junior A in Canada in the Ontario Junior League and is a high-end player, but for him to go play two consecutive years in Israel, even though he is an Israeli citizen, would be kind of a step back for his career. So it's challenging in that respect when we get high-end players who happen to, say, be dual Canadian-Israeli or dual American-Israeli. Meanwhile, Aaron's brother Daniel played pro in the ECHL as recently as last year and at 26 years old, played a few pro seasons, captained RIT to the Frozen Four a couple of years ago, but he was born in Israel in Netanya, so he played his youth hockey when he was young there, so that wasn't a problem to meet the two-year requirement, whereas Aaron had been born later on in Canada. You know, he's 6-7 years younger than Dan when his family had already moved. So logistically, it's a huge challenge for them to be able to develop the high-end players or get them to qualify. So that's why the real focus is on the grassroots over in Israel and raising the level of everything from the youth leagues to the national league there so that they can start turning out players of that level rather than having to hope that a guy might be able to spend two consecutive years and then get back to higher-level play elsewhere.
Yeah, I just thought that whole process when you were discussing it during the press conference, it really is a testament to these guys and their commitment, you know, not only to the game but to Israel and to playing. And I guess from being a spectator of the Olympics, you know, you see these people on TV and you don't realize, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, they work extremely hard to get to that level, but the time commitment and what they have to do not only to just qualify to get to that point is just incredible.
If you think about it, with Israel hockey, it's almost, in a sense, you know, even more of a commitment in the respect that, you know, Israel obviously is not about to go play the U.S. or Canada or Russia or Sweden or the Czechs or what have you because they'd get destroyed. So if you're going to go, you know, play hockey for a country where it's a developing sport or a minor sport such as Israeli hockey, you know, you're hoping to compete at the fourth or fifth or sixth level, depending on where they are in any given year, based on their ranking. You know, Israel currently is in the, I think it's the fifth tier of nine tiers of international competition. So they're light years away from ever making the Olympics. They did Olympic qualifying last year, and, you know, they lost in the first round. So it's, you know, if you want to play for them in world competition, that's great, but you realize that, you know, all the sacrifice and all of the effort ultimately is going to lead you to IIHF World Championship play, you know, at a lower level than the elite mm-hmm. nations play. So if anything, it's even more of a commitment because you know you're not going to the Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of world competition, the World Cup is coming up, is it not?
Well, the World Championships are coming up for, it's called Division 2B. Which is, you know, basically, again, what equates to the fifth tier of international competition for the men's team. They are going to Cape Town, South Africa, and they'll be competing in early April, coming up 10 days, I think they leave, actually. And they'll be competing against South Africa, Bulgaria, Belgium, I think Serbia, but there's, you know, teams, you know, where it's also, you know, at the relatively same level of play. You know, last year Israel was in 2A, but they got relegated by finishing in last place, so they got sent down to 2B. At the 2B level, they should be one of the favorites to win gold, but, you know, you never know what happens in any given year. I think Mexico's in there also, if I'm not mistaken. And believe it or not, the Mexicans have a really strong team that's developing with a semi-pro league down in Mexico. So it's they'll be probably the toughest competition that the Israelis face in Cape Town.
And are you going? Are you joining them on that trip?
No.
Unfortunately, I'm not. The demands of family and clients and the practice are keeping me here on Long Island. But that's all right. I'll get there one day for them. You know, right now their under 18 team is actually in Taiwan. So if you recall, our head coach, Felix Kozak, for the exhibition game, he's actually down with the team now, the under 18 team over in Taiwan, where they're currently they've got a 1-1-1 record with two games to go. You know, they beat South Africa actually today. They had lost to Taiwan, and they lost an overtime game to Mexico. So the under 18 team is already underway in Taiwan, and the men are going to South Africa. So you know, on they go, and hopefully they'll be competitive enough, you know, in South Africa to win the tournament and get back to 2A, which would be the fourth tier. You know, obviously U.S., Canada, et cetera, in the first tier. But if they can get back up to the fourth tier, that's where we'd like to see them become a stable hockey program. If not, they'll be stuck in 2B for next year. I don't think they're going to get relegated at the 2B level, but, you know, one never knows.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that we just had an email come in of a listener who wanted me to ask a question.
Sure.
So, actually, it's John from Rockville Center, and John wants to know. He's asking if his son wants to get into the Ferraro Brothers program. Mm-hmm. What would be? Do they have a specific one just for beginners? And what would be the commitment from a parental standpoint?
You know, that would probably be better directed to the Twin Rinks itself, but I believe they do have, I know they just had one, but they have a Try Hockey for Free program where if you've never played before, you can get out there and they'll basically, you know, stick you on the ice and give you a little bit of instruction and see if you like it enough to then continue on with one of their programs. But if you go on, I think it's twinrinkseisenhower.com. They have a whole really great website that'll give you all of the different available programs. But if they don't have the Try Hockey for Free at the moment, you could probably call the rink and speak to one of the people over there and find out when the next doing it. But for someone who's never played before, and if you're not sure if you want to invest the time or the money in the equipment, that would probably be the best way to get out there and see if it's something that your child might enjoy.
Great. Well, unfortunately, our time has come, and you have been absolutely wonderful and certainly have shared a lot of information that's really helpful. So we want to
thank you so much
that.
Again for
and
having me.
Yes, yeah, a pleasure. We'd love to have you back. And for all of us, for all of those listeners out there, be sure to follow Mark on Facebook at facebook.com/mark.brunengraber. And also make sure you check out International Hockey Forums at forums.internationalhockey.net. And to learn more about the Israel hockey team, visit www.israelhockey.co.il. And we want to thank you again, Mark, for joining us today, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you guys again for having me, and thanks for the great job you did a couple of weeks ago. I can't thank you enough. It's been really, really fantastic, and we look forward to doing it again for sure.
Yes. Thank you so much.
And we hope you all join us next week, April 9th at 4 p.m., when we interview President of Aquasai USA, Rudy Beifeld, to talk to him about some of the great events and causes that Aquasai Natural Artisan Water is going to support this summer. So thank you all, and have a good one.
Thank you, and have a great day. Thanks,
Thank
Mark.
You, guys. Be well.
Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye now.